The folks in the circular economy react to the paradigm built by the capitalist paradigm based on extract value, and then become limited in what they can actually see from there. Unfortunately, they can only see the material world, which is the outcome of the limitations of the narrower paradigms. Welcome to Business Second Opinion. Today, we're taking a look at the circular economy and how it fits in the world of real and deep change. This may shock you a little bit to understand what a narrow view it comes from and how Harvard Business Review has fallen into a more fragmenting worldview on this one. But first, I'm at it again, drinking on the job. I just got back from the gym, so I'm having a delicious mint chip protein Rebel Tasty Elixir. Nothing tastes better after a hard workout to help me build strength. Rebel's not only the sponsor of our podcast here at BSO, but they create righteous plant alchemy like this, which means it's good for you, good for your body, your being, and Mother Earth. And they go a step further to co-create a future without human trafficking. Rebel donates 2.5% of all net sales to Not For Sale. Through impact sourcing, they help communities to thrive and prevent their vulnerability to trafficking in the first place. Their rallying cry is, "We are Rebel." Business Second Opinion is the podcast that digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. These are questions you may not know you need to be asking, but we believe you should. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion, as you know by now, usually a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian responding to big, hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hey, Zach.
So, Carol, why don't we kick everyone's brain into gear here and start working on this doozy?
Yeah, so the way I've been framing how to think about this is I went and put into a search engine the idea of real change and change the world. And there were literally thousands of organizations and issues popped up saying, if you work on this, it'll make all the difference. And I thought, all right, we need to wrestle this thing to the ground for, you know, like what does really create planetary and societal health? And I thought we would pick up and use one example out of those that show up and is really talked about a lot, which is the circular economy. And we'll use it to test how you could figure out maybe what would make a big difference.
So for those who don't know, the circular economy approach has been adopted by a lot of businesses in the last decade, including Google. Its creation is actually a pretty interesting story. So Ellen MacArthur of the MacArthur Foundation circumnavigated the globe solo, breaking the world record in 71 days and 14 hours with only a small pack of goods to keep her nourished. It made her so aware of our finite planetary resources and how actually little we can live with. Simultaneously, she recognized how we culturally have adopted a lifestyle focused around the accumulation of material goods.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, on her return, she set up a foundation to explore a better way to manage Earth's resources and our use of them. These findings led to a concept that we now know as the circular economy.
It's actually been widely adopted as a result of the World Economic Forum's annual meeting at Davos in 2013. The message coming out of that was essentially companies need to look for better ways to manage dwindling natural resources, especially those that are most prolific in their overuse, like digital devices, packaging, food waste, and apparel. It's a valid idea, to be sure, and can it make a difference to planetary health is really the question here, Carol.
Well, I think it can, but I think it has a lot of limitations that tend to be blocked out by the advocates of circular economy. The reason that I give it a yes, I think it would make a difference, is that it will slow down the driver of one of the bigger challenges we face in the climate crisis. The reason it is limited, however, is that it's trying to work on that problem from the same paradigm that got us into the mess. So not surprisingly, we're thinking from an old paradigm, the extract value that got us into where we are in terms of depletion and the acceleration of that depletion. So the question is it powerful enough and deep enough to get us to a new worldview?
Great. So for all of you listening, let's do a quick refresher on the four paradigms we use to make sense of the way people work on change. So I want you all to start by imaging a hierarchy. Four ascending levels, just like rungs on a ladder. And we're going to start from the bottom most level with extract value. So extract value is when people think of resources in ownership terms. This is the one where whoever owns it gets to extract the value from it. Simple as that. The next paradigm up from there, the second rung, is arrest disorder, which is trying to slow down the harm that comes from the ownership extract value paradigm. This, coincidentally, is the source of the sustainability movement, fair trade programs, and others just like them.
And by the way, this is where the circular economy shows up, as we shall see. And it's not bad stuff. It's just a limited paradigm in order especially to be able to innovate from and make these quantum jumps that we need to be able to make at this point in time on our planet. So don't let me stop you, Zach. Please continue.
Okay, great. So the third one, next rung up, and most encompassing paradigm thus far is the do-good paradigm, where arrest disorder wants to reduce the harm. Do good wants to get behind the problem and do something more systemically. And finally, the most encompassing paradigm of all of them is a regenerative life paradigm. It's about evolving the capacity of living systems based on the uniqueness of each life form and being. Okay, Carol, so I walked everyone through the paradigms, but they're probably all asking themselves, what does this have to do with the circular economy and change that actually works?
Yeah, we're working our way there, but let me lay just a little more groundwork and go a little deeper than we have in talking about these paradigms before, so they become a better instrument for discernment by our listeners.
And definitely explain why you say the circular economy is from the same paradigm that created the problem, and also why you think it's potentially helpful.
Well, yes, I promise. The extract value is one that comes really from industrialists, from people who own oil, and from financial folks, because they have narrowed down the beneficiaries of who profits from the economy into a very narrow set of people. And it's based on the idea of physical wealth worldview, not a broader sense of wealth. It's all about what we can own and sell or use for the owner's benefit in a transactional world. I think one thing that may be helpful for people to image how it is that people who are even working to stop the bad stuff get trapped in the same worldview. If we think about the three domains that are used for creating as much benefit as possible. The first is assets. You know, that has to do with like transportation and institutions, labor, which obviously has to do with people and animals in many cases, and material, which has to do with the resources we take out of the ground and the use we make.
You know, it's interesting. These three domains show up in both Marxian and capitalist thinking. And maybe that's the reason so many people feel capitalism is a failed model.
Well, maybe. But I think we see it as, in my mind, it's just a limited way of seeing. It's not necessarily a failed model. I think it has a lot to do with how our mind went to work on it with the problem we have here of what we're going to call fragmentation. For example, in the extract value paradigm, assets are seen as the instruments for the production of goods and services. And that includes the infrastructure like roads, dams, and even farms, industrial farms. Plus, if you think of forests this way rather than as a living system, they become a warehouse for raw materials being stored. And with labor, you can include everything from employees and their wages to slaves that are held for sale directly or for their bodies or as ongoing labor.
So I can see how this paradigm is inherently limiting to people and their potential. At the same time, I can see how it creates jobs as opportunities that certain people do not have access to as a result.
Yes. Okay. So let me give you the third domain. The third domain, which I'm calling materials, which is the resources themselves, which particularly as circular economy is concerned about, is also they are embedded in a matrix which grows their value, like soil and watersheds.
Yeah, you're right, Carol. These are the physical instruments of value creation in many people's eyes. So how is the circular economy coming from this paradigm, though?
Well, because they're seeing the problem through the eyes of the value extractors, this fragmented, the separation of asset, labor, and material, and even the material, raw material from the matrix it exists in. So the conglomerates see each of these three domains as separate domains. In fact, so do most of the people in the ecological and environmental world. We get trapped in that they're segmented things, each with their own issues. For example, here again, the resources are separated from the matrix which nourishes them and from the humans who are thinking in a way that depletes them.
Okay, So let me make sure I'm following for the sake of myself and our listeners. So they accept, the circular economy folks accept the capitalist arenas of assets, labor, and materials as isolated subjects, fixed and segmented, in other words. And then they divide the groups and work on them separately, just as the extractors do. So working on reducing consumption for oil, iron, minerals, and so on, separates these natural resources from those who work on the matrix of those resources. In other words, separating the field from the oil, the mountains from the ore, and the soil from the biota, and the soil for that matter, from the produce that grows in it. And so you end up working with a waste-less group of folks working separately from the soil folks who are doing organic and sustainable farming. And yet they're all material. This is all necessary. It is the same paradigm as the value extraction folks, but just trying to put the brakes on a glaring problem.
You know, I just remembered a story that I heard when I was at a farmer's market in Pennsylvania some years ago. Amish farmers show up there, maybe it was in Delaware. And I asked them, how in the world did they think about what it meant to be healthy when you're farming? And this one guy said to me, well, you have to ask, does the produce get healthier? Does the process for producing it get healthier? And does the producer, which he included humans and the natural systems, all get healthier? So he didn't have separate groups, and he didn't separate labor out from it. But most people do separate out. You have people who are working on slavery, which, you know, I give money to. I mean, it's not that these things are things we shouldn't work on, but they keep being worked on separately in a protective and preventative way. We're able to build a mind that can see how these all fit together in a system in maybe one place. And a separate group is working on cruelty to animals in factories and research labs, and a separate group on equity, inclusion, and fair trade. I mean, it's exhausting when you think about these thousands of things that showed up on my Google search in order to determine what it was people thought it took to save our planet.
And there's definitely crossover once in a while with folks like Rebel, who sponsors the show, who work on soil health from the material domain and human health and preventing slavery in the labor domain. This is rare, though. But when noticed, it gets turned into a list of 17 factors like the UN has, for example, with the Sustainable Development Goals or SDGs. They're each most often targeted with resulting corporate functions. So let me give you a concrete example. Let's take Microsoft, for example, right? They have 12 functional departments that cover this list, like a sustainability department, a corporate citizenship department, a circular economy department, and so on and so forth. And we see the same paradigm at work in not-for-profits as well in that space, raising their voices and raising money to fight for single issues in a fragmented way. And then you also see this duplicated in the world of philanthropy as well.
Yeah, well, in fact, I sit on a board, JLF Foundation, and our work is primarily to get people to work in an integrated, comprehensive way, in a place-sourced way, so that you bring together these massive foundations with billions of dollars, and rather than having them divided up into different functions, to look at what would it mean to take on the city of Chicago, or some part of the heartland in terms of the health and vitality of Omaha and all its surrounding areas, and get philanthropic organizations seeing themselves as working in a more whole way. The real challenge, again, is that we're back to, for the most part, people work on these broken up asset domains where they're actually even throwing the public assets and the regulatory agencies into what they're working on and trying to get people to pay attention or give them permission through regulatory process to be able to use them for their own wealth. Do the same thing. Sorry, I just thought of the same things true with water and with carbon sequestration, emissions trading, carbon pricing. All of these things are working, but they're working in a fragmented way.
So let's drill down on this even further then. So why is it the circular economy fit here into the value extraction paradigm?
So I'm not claiming that they're trying to extract value. I'm claiming they're working on it through that mindset. So they're following the fragmented process established during the Industrial Revolution and the development of capitalism. They're narrowing down into a way of being able to see everything as, well, how we got here is into a linear way of seeing it. In fact, one of the things they say on one of their websites, I can't remember who it was, is that we now as think of ourselves as consumers, I give them that, single-use lifestyle made from a take, make, dispose world. And they're seeing that as a unidirectional model of production, or saying that we do, where natural resources provide our factory inputs, they're used to make massive amount of goods, they're purchased and they're disposed of way too often in a single use. So the linear economy model of mass production, mass consumption has reached its limits. It's not sustainable. And they believe we need to move toward a circular economy, and that's inevitable. Now, the problem I have with that is that's on the same level. They're making a loop out of it, but it's still at the level, and you remember your ladder that you did earlier? Mm-hmm. It's still at a paradigm that's at the base level, except it's at the working from the second level to arrest all of this loop, kind of the linearity, rather than being able to move in the system. So they're not wrong, but it's just too limited a way if we're going to really work on it in a way that can create the answer to the question we started the show with, which is, can these really make a difference to the health and vitality of planets and society?
Okay, I think I see the picture you're painting. So let me give it a shot here. So the folks in the circular economy react to the paradigm built by the capitalist paradigm based on extract value, and then become limited in what they can actually see from there. Unfortunately, they can only see the material world, which is the outcome of the limitations of the narrower paradigms. So for example, the industrialist and the financial world want to extract value. The circular economy is limited to that view with how selfish and destructive it is. So they work on things like retaining value in the exact same three domains as assets, labor, and materials, but they just select one aspect of those material domains, and then they subdivide it into smaller domains and look at the natural resources cut off from the matrix from which they arise. Again, back to soil, biota, watersheds, and so on.
Yep, they're trying to retain value versus extract it, but it's still down at that same paradigm. So the problem with the paradigm of extract value, which is used here, is that it only allows us to go to the arrest disorder of that, which is about overcoming the extract value and then reducing the harm. It just becomes a war of two sides. And we see this in the press. We see it in the media. We see it everywhere we go, including the schools, which where kids debate it. If we're going to expand value and slow down the work of extracting value, which is really working against those who want to expand and grow and cause the problems, then you can't just reverse the expansion growth. You can't just make it circular because it's still flat. And there are no circles in living systems.
So if they at least move to a do-good paradigm, they're now connected to the system in which things happen. They could see geologic systems, biological, economic, and more systems at work. The flaw is that systems cannot be seen from the lower paradigm because it's not about broken down fragments that are demanded. The fragments, or these fragments, are products of our way of thinking. They cannot see the holes in which life actually exists.
Yes, and to remind people, do good was the next level you gave us above arrest disorder. So it's the third level up on our rungs. And it doesn't mean, I don't want you to think of it a traditional hierarchy. It shows how much more encompassing you can be in what you can see. Here, the value is distributed and reciprocal, not in this narrowed down by ownership or retained even for some shared ownership. There's no ownership. Each paradigm we go up on your ladder gives us a more complete and whole way to look at the same subject matter and the integration of subject matters. The domains move from physical to what is embedded in systems in a watershed. So we no longer have separated that which is material and that which is its matrix. And it exists as a city or a neighborhood. It exists in a region. and the geological systems can be seen on a global scale for the and the hydrological systems on top of them and the biological systems, the settlement patterns, economic, cultural. Well, anyway, you get the idea that we need to be able to move. And what we're doing here offering today is the idea of being able to use the mind to be able to see something more systemically. The benefit of doing all this is it really wakes people up to the challenges that we have, and it helped us reduce waste. That's what the circular economy does, but it's limited because it cannot see the worlds and the levels above it that help us understand more completely how our planet works.
So the regenerative paradigm, the next level up beyond that, asks instead not what's bad or what's better, but what is nodal. So in other words, where do we work in such a way that works on all of this rather than a slice that gets all of our attention? Just because you have money, like an heiress like Ellen MacArthur has. Now, I'm not going to argue against our need to reduce consumption. But it's not necessarily nodal. It's incremental. Even brilliant minds like Paul Hawken and the team who did Drawdown gave us a list at the end of the day. A prioritized list of fragmented solutions, but not a nodal idea. We need to ask ourselves instead, what is foundational? And it is all at the same level of the physical world domains that we started with. So what is nodal is the regenerative question to begin from.
Right, which is where we actually started. What is it that would make a difference? My answer to that and why we do the work that we do in Carol Sanford Institute and the summit and all the other things we work on is that critical to all of this, nodal to all this, is what we call critical thinking skills, like systems thinking, living systems thinking, so that we can catch ourselves when we're fragmented. We can notice when we look for generic answers, which again have the ability of flattening everything rather than seeing it as alive, like persons and watersheds.
You know, it's interesting that nowhere on the Drawdown list is systems thinking. It was on Dana Meadows' list as one of the most leverageable ways to bring about change, but unfortunately, she didn't live long enough to develop it completely.
Yeah, it's true. You could see that's where she was going at the end. My institute has been working on this for over 40 years. That is on thinking, systems thinking, in fact, living systems thinking. And I want to keep saying those together because it's really important to get to the living systems view. Otherwise, what we're going to really do is just slow down what people see as the problems and the answers, which people can't grasp from the level of thinking they're at. They can't see the impact of their own actions. And it stays abstract for them. Thinking is the power mover for everything on the smaller domains. All of those fragmented things we see require us being able to see how they work together, like my Amish farmer at the market in Philadelphia. And to be able to see how we keep cutting off the natural resources when we work on something like the separation of the matrix from it.
So the circular economy is not bad, just very limited. And we need to teach critical thinking skills and personal self-management, which are nodal to changing all of this. That seems actually like a great place to end today.
If you're a woman, I'd like to invite you to something. If you're a woman leading change, you own a business, you lead a not-for-profit, you may even be leading a campaign, and you want to build these kind of nodal thinking skills in order to build your own business, your own organization, to be effective in leading change, and you want to have all of that include having a healthy society and planet, join the Regenerative Women Entrepreneur Community. We're opening up to new members December 6, 2019. Go to seed-communities.com and then look at the tab on the navigation bar. It says the Regenerative Life, and that's where you'll find it, and you can read more.
If you want to get one of our awesome Get a Second Opinion mugs, send us your topics on practices in business that need a second opinion. You can email us at carol@businesssecondopinion.com or find us on Twitter @biz_second_opinion. If we use it to develop an episode, you get a mug. It's that easy. Also, your ratings and reviews on any platform to help people find us and spread the word are most helpful. And don't forget to sign up for our newsletter so you can get connections to the show notes and more. And thanks as always to Numi T. They sponsor our show notes and are also a local champion for the upcoming Regenerative Business Summit on November 19th. Check out the Regenerative Business Summit website at regenerativebusinesssummit.com. You can learn how your essence can become a powerful decision-making guide to grow your business. And you can join UMIT there as a champion in your town. This has been Business Second Opinion. Thank you.